didn't prepare anything either, believe it or not. But I really enjoyed Brian's talk, and especially Mad Dog. I knew there was something good there. I'm a big fan of Mad Dog. I've had several spiritual experiences on it. I don't remember any of them, but other people told me about them. One of them involved me on the back of a VW bug that was doing donuts in a parking lot. But I don't remember that. I don't know. I'm going to say a lot, probably. My name is Bill. I am an alcoholic. I've been sober for thousands of years now. I got sober in the last century. I heard a guy say that once. But I don't know what the hell I'm going to talk about. I guess I'm going to talk about drinking. That's the only thing that I could relate to when I was new. Thank God people just get up here and just talk about the big book. It would have been even more unbearable than it was when I was new. But I don't know. Getting sober for me was horrible. There was nothing that I liked about it very much, except for when some guys would tell some crazy stories. Like somebody might talk that they saw Jimi Hendrix in concert, and that might get my attention. Mostly I decide, I cannot believe I'm at AA. Like, how much worse can it get? You know, like, what's next? The freaking circus? Am I going to be juggling or something? You know, because, I mean, it just seemed like a bad after-school special. I mean, I was 18 when I went to my first AA meeting. I just thought that was, I mean, everybody knows an alcoholic is like 70 years old, right? I mean, at least that's what I thought. And, you know, the only reason I was in the treatment center was I had seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And I thought I'd pull a Jack Nicholson, you know, pretend that I was an alcoholic because I had these charges. And I was like, well, that's why I did all this crazy shit, because I'm an alcoholic and I didn't know any better. You know, I'm getting treatment. And, you know, the treatment was kind of weird, but kind of getting out of order. I started drinking at 14. My first drink was Carlo Rossi wine. And it was like $6 a gallon, and all I really remember about it is, I don't know why I still remember the price, it's like 12 now, I check whenever I'm at Walmart, because, you know, this could stop working. But I drank that wine, it tasted horrible, but all I remember was smiling, you know what I mean? I felt these muscles in my face that I didn't know existed, because I was just a miserable kid. And, you know, I really, you know, I mean, some things were messed up, but I just was always in my head. I mean, I was always in my head, and painfully so. You know what I mean? Anything that went down, I thought about hours after it happened. Like, it'd be like, why'd you say that? You should have did this. If you would have did this, this would have happened. And it was unbearable. But when I drank, I didn't, you know what I mean? I just felt calm. I mean, I love the lines in the book, the words. It says, the sense of comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks, ease and comfort. And that's what it did for me, you know? And that first time I drank, got a little buzz, I just thought, man, this is the secret to life. You know what I mean? I'm going to do this every chance I get. And that's pretty much what I set out to do. And it's interesting. I've always been a thinker. But when it came to drinking, I was all about action. You know what I mean? I was all about action, man. I mean, you know, I didn't think I was a thief. But, you know, like, I was the type of people like, oh, we're going to break. No, I don't steal. They're like, there's a bunch of wine in that guy's basement. I'd be the first one through the window, you know. And I would take action when it came to drinking. You know, and do things. And I used to hitchhike a lot, and unfortunately you just get to see that on the ID Network shows now. But I used to hitchhike a lot before the serial killers ruined it all for us. But hitchhiking was interesting. You know, you meet interesting people, and first you're praying that you get in someone's car, and then once you get in someone's car, you're praying to God that you get out of it alive. And but it never stopped me. You know what I mean? I was like, the sooner I start getting to the other side of town, because I would walk 20 miles, you know, in a heartbeat on the rumor that there was a party. And there wouldn't even be a party. I'd like to show up, and they'd be like, who are you? I'd be like, hey, I heard there's some party here. And they'd be like, no, there's no party. Like, get the hell out of here, you know. And I don't know. It's just crazy. But I drank that wine that night. And then I mean, just to show you how naive I was and stuff, one of my friends, I caught him smoking pot. You would have think he was mainlining heroin. I flipped out. I'm like, you smoke pot? Like, I totally freaked out. Got way back. Like, I thought I might inhale some and think I was Jesus or something. You know, I had no idea about anything. And the next day, I was smoking pot. And that's pretty much how everything went. Every day, I would just be like, "Hal, I'm never going to do that. It's never going to happen to me." And then 5 minutes later, I'm doing it. You know what I mean? And like, when I came to AA and NA the first times, I would be like, "Well, I never shot heroin." Like, you know, I never was around anybody shooting heroin. I'm sure if I was, I would have, you know, did it like 8 minutes later. I would have seen them get off and been like, "Yeah, let's do it." because that's how I'd be. I'd be like, well, what does it feel like? You know what I mean? I was like, really? And I mean, you know, my sponsor tells this story where he's like, you know, take an acid. He's like, yeah, you'll be hallucinating for 20 hours or whatever, you know, and you're going to see things that aren't there. You want to do it? And I'd be like, absolutely. You know what I mean? It's like, so in the beginning, that was another thing. Like, I was like, I was never going to, I saw this documentary on LSD. And it was like a 60 minutes, and I saw these people freaking out and flat. I said, "Man, I would never take that shit. It can mess your brain up forever." A week later, my cousin's got like 100 hits of acid, you know, and he's like, "You want to do some acid?" And I'm like, "That ain't acid. It looked like Pop Rocks to me. You know, it looked like candy." Anyway, I take one. I wait about 7 minutes. Nothing happened. I said, "Dude, it's candy." He's like, "Take another one." So I take another one. Nothing happened. You know, he's like, take another one. Anyway, I take like 8 of them. They turn out to be real, you know. Now I'm just like playing with my cigarette, being like, I wonder if I'm going back to junior high. You know, it's like, I hope I can still do math after this. And, you know, and when I finally was normal after all the praying, like, God, I'd like to come back now. It's been fun, but I did it every chance I got. Same thing. But drinking was my thing. When I got here, I thought I was a drug addict. But, you know, drinking was really my thing. Just being young, it's hard to get alcohol. You got to, at least for me, it was. I had to steal it. My parents had a few fifths. So I went through that like the first week, you know. Then it was over. And you had to steal it or get older people. I had to hitchhike. So now I'm 14. I'm hanging out in this awesome trailer park that had a pay lake. And my mother was horrified. I'm hanging out with guys that are like 35 years old, just covered in tats. And you can't understand it today. Tats weren't trendy back then. Tats, if you had sleeves, you'd been in prison. And like the more tats, it kind of, you could do calculations for how much time in prison you'd done. And the guy I hung out with just did 10 years. They called him Stone. And Stone, you know, I mean, anytime we'd be like, well, that's Stone. He's been in the joint. He'll know. He'll know what to do. You know, it was like, this is crazy. But, and you know, I got to hang out with these guys a little while, and then I got kicked out for my drinking. You know, and when I wasn't allowed to hang out with these older guys, I felt like I got kicked out of Harvard. You know what I mean? I was like, you just blew the opportunity of a lifetime hanging out with the coolest people in the world. You know, Vietnam vets and these guys. You know, I would be so humiliated because it would always be me blacking out. You know, because I'd drink like a pig, I'd black out, and then I'd wake up like, what did I do? And then I'd have to hear about it. You know, if you're like me, you do detective work. If you're alcoholic, you know about this. So you call the last person you remember seeing, and you're like, hey, man. That was crazy last night. That's all you say, you know, and they're just like, you don't remember. You know, they're always disgusted, too. They don't think it's funny. They're just like, dude, you need to stop drinking. You know, I mean, people were telling me that at 14 years old, and I'd be like, why? What happened? You know, and they'd be like, don't go to Bob's house. And I'm like, why? What happened at Bob's house? They're like, you don't even want to know, bro, you know. And they wouldn't tell me most of the time. Then I just had to, like, imagine, like, what the hell could I have done that was so horrible that, you know, I can't go there, you know, and or they tell me that it was even worse, you know, it'd just be embarrassing. Usually there'd be nudity and a lot of puking and nudity, you know. So I was always, you know, as most alcoholic men, I was always using the bathroom where there isn't a bathroom, you know, just a corner. With my mom, my first blackout, I tried to pee behind the speakers in the living room. And I remember telling me, I'm like, you're just saying this to scare me. That's what I thought in my head. Like, you're just trying to scare me out of drinking, you know. And I remember my little brother being like, yeah, you did. He was like laughing. And I'm so grateful that I got sober before cell phones and cameras and all that crap, you know, because I would, you know, definitely be a YouTube star. But I just kept thinking that it was a matter of training. You know what I mean? You just got to drink so you can handle your alcohol like a man. So I just kept drinking, and nothing really changed. It just became more random, you know what I mean? Like, I might drink all night, and nothing bad happens. I just pass out and sit still and don't pee my pants. That's a great night. But more often than not, you know, I wake up, everybody's passed out. And the other bad thing is they had acid-washed jeans back then, which really accentuate the urine stains. You know, so you wake up, your pants are pissed to your knees, everybody else has passed out, and I'm not worried that my pants are pissed so much. I'm worried, did I piss my pants before they passed out or after they passed out? You know, these are the kind of problems I would have. I think normal people would just stop drinking, but that never once crossed my mind. I just drank more, tried different combinations, you know, different things. But, it, you know, it just got worse. And most people, the other thing was most people I drink with like twice, maybe twice. If they're really off the chain, maybe a few times. But, you know, and it just became sad. And I thought the whole thing was that I didn't have a license. Because I grew up in Mayberry, kind of. Well, you kids are too young to know. But there was a show called The Andy Griffith Show, and it was like a perfect idyllic town, and it was a little town called Loveland, Ohio. That's where I grew up. But that's what it was like. It was nice. It was safe. I hated it. I couldn't wait to get the hell away from there. We had like 8 acres and horses. I couldn't stand it. You know, I wanted to be like in the projects because there was a lot more drugs and a lot more teenage, you know, action going on. So that's where I would hitchhike to, you know, and with people who got high, their parents got high with the kids, and I was like, that's awesome. I didn't notice they didn't have food, but you know what I mean, or electric. But I thought it was awesome that the dad, you know, partied with the kids and stuff. So, you know, I would go to those places, and I started getting arrested, you know, pretty much after my first blackout. It just kept getting worse, really. From the beginning, it just got worse. And I just kept thinking I was going to control my drinking, you know. I mean, I didn't, like, set out and think that, but I would get up and, like, you know, this endless thinking and conversations with myself, you know, where it's like, okay, you need to pace yourself better. You need to do this or whatever. And it's all just ridiculous because I always drink like a pig. I'm always obsessed with alcohol. I mean, I feel better just knowing that there's a possibility I'm going to drink. You know what I mean? I haven't even drank yet. And if, like, Todd calls me and says, hey, dude, I got a 12-pack, come over, I'm like, yes. I mean, I already just feel amazing. You know what I mean? Before that, I'm like, I'm just going to blow my brains out for my parents living out here in the suburbs to punish them, you know, kind of thing. My mom would always be like, honey, what are you going to do tonight? I'd be like, probably burn this house down. You know, I'd say shit like that. And I blamed her for everything until I was about 48. But, you know, I mean, it just, I was just always like that, you know, and I don't know where I got that from. I got a brother that grew up in the same house. He does not think that way at all, you know, and that's the awesome thing about having a sponsor. I remember when I got sober, I'd be crying to my sponsor about, like, how screwed up my mom was and why I'm like this and all. He's like, well, wait a minute, you got a brother, right? My sponsor's horrible. He always asks me questions, you know. And then you got to answer. And I go, yeah, why? And he's like, well, your brother, he doesn't have DUIs, does he? I'm like, no. He goes, is your brother an alcoholic? I'm like, no. He goes, is your brother going to prison? I'm like, I don't really want to talk about this. You know what I mean? It just totally pissed me off. But I mean, it helped me so much by him asking me. I think if he would have told me, I just would have quit talking to him, you know. But he would ask me and make me answer, you know. But kind of off there. But yeah, it just kept getting worse. I just kept drinking. And then I thought, you know, I get to be like 16 or 17. And also, all the hitchhiking just sucks. You know, people throw fireworks at you. They throw bottles. They stop. You run up to the car. They burn them off, you know. They throw ice balls at you. And a lot of times, you just freeze to death. You're just out there just freezing to death, you know, and just thinking, man. And I never think, well, I'm out here in the middle of nowhere because I wanted to drink. You know what I mean? I got a nice house that I can live at, you know, with Atari and stuff. Atari, hey, like that. We had Atari. You know, so I thought, I'll get a car. So how I got a car, here's how my brother got a car. He got a job, he saved his money, and he bought a car, right? How I got a car is I demanded to drive my mom. She laughed at me and said, you're so drunk, you can't figure out how to get into the front door at night. Why would I let you drive my car? And I hated that bitch. But, you know, I mean, I just hated her. I was like, you know, like, why won't you let me drive your car, you know? She had special ordered this sofa. I had a blackout. It came that day. It was delivered. I passed out on it, pissed all over it. And I hitchhiked to work. She was supposed to drive me, but I hitchhiked because I really didn't want to ride with my mom. You know what I mean? So I hitchhiked to work. And I'll never forget my dad calling me and just the disgust in his voice. He's just like, what? Why do you do this stuff? What is it? You don't know this stuff? And this quick, I came up with, I was like, well, Dad, you know, they were separated. And this is not how it was at all. But this quick, I'm like, if you just had to see Mom and all these different men that come to the house, all I can do is drink to take care of the pain. It was a complete horrible lie. You know, but that's how I am when I'm drinking. I'll throw anybody under the bus to take the heat off me. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't even have to think about it. It just happens, you know. And my dad's crying. I'm like, if I had a car, I could get away from all this pain. So he had me a car that weekend. I had a 65 Mustang. It was mostly Bondo. But it was a 65 Mustang, and, you know, I think I had my license 3 months, and I got my first DUI. And, you know, I really thought when I got the car, I thought, you know, I'll be able to drive, I'll get a job, I'll have a girlfriend. I guess I thought the job and the girlfriend were going to be in the trunk of the car. But, you know, I got the car, and I just started driving, and then my mom got me the sweetest job in alcohol I can have. I was a dishwasher at a little mom-and-pop restaurant before computers. So first thing in the morning, I got to clean the bar. That's where they keep all the liquor. So first thing in the morning, I'm drinking, you know, coffee and whatever. And I always thought I was going to find money in there. Never did. Never found a dime in that damn bar. But I would clean it looking for money and never find any money. Then I would clean the walk-in, which is where they keep the canned beer, and accidentally a couple 12-packs would end up in the garbage. Then I'd go out to the dumpster, and I'd hide it under the dumpster, you know. And then while I was out at the dumpster, I'd smoke many bowls, you know. And I remember the guy kept being like, man, the other guy, we can't even get him to take the garbage out. You take the garbage out like every 15 minutes. I was like, well, I don't want it to get too heavy, you know. Out there torquing bowls. And I used to get baked all day and eat. I mean, I just make me these like 3-pound hamburgers and stuff. I loved it, you know. And they paid me under the table like $2 an hour or something. But, you know, I always wonder why they never asked why I was always filling a cooler with ice before I'd leave. At the end of my shift, I'd be filling this cooler with ice, you know what I mean, and put it in my car. And then I'd drive around back and fill it up with all the beer, and I'd show up at these parties, you know, and I just thought I was awesome. But no one would really ride with me because I'm an alcoholic, you know. And I remember my friends were just like, they would get out of the car. One night this guy got out of the car. He goes, you're going to kill somebody. He got out of the car and left me with all this beer and stuff. And I'm like, what's his problem? I mean, that was always me. People telling me, you know, like, you're crazy and just leaving. You know what I mean? And I just be like, what, man? Nobody likes to party. I'm going to California. People like to party in California. You know, and that night, right after that guy, or actually, what made that guy get out of the car is I was parked in front of two of those big concrete parking blocks, you know, where they're on each side. I drove over both of them. I put the car in drive, just drove over both of them in my car, and that's when he's like, I'm out of here, you know what I mean? And I was like, damn, just relax, you know? But that night, I picked up a guy hitchhiking and had him drive my car so I could mix drinks while he was driving. You know, we ended up at a outlaw motorcycle club. And another nice night. But anyway, it just kept going. You'd think I would stop or slow down. No, nothing. Nothing changed. I mean, I would just party with whoever would have me. And with the drinking, I would always do math. You know what I mean? Wherever I'd go, I would see how much alcohol there was, and I'd think, like, what's the best case scenario? Like, how many can I hammer into me, you know? And I'd be always concerned, you know, I don't have any money. And I'm like, are we going to go on a beer run? You know, I'm always the guy with no money. He's like, we need to go on a beer run. We need to get more beer. And they're like, where's your money? Like, you know what I mean? Like, who is this guy? You know, and who invited him, you know? And you can be sure of, you know, I wasn't invited back. Like, the next time, it would be people like it, they're like, no, no. You know what I mean? They just put your hand, you can't, you're, you know, dude, you can't come in. And I'd be so, like, offended, you know? So, like I said, I had my license like 3 months, and I always tell this story about Arby's, you know. What happened is I went to get a beef and cheddar, and I'm pulling out, and I cut off a state trooper, you know. And so he pulls me over, and immediately, believe it or not, I had long hair, I had this headband on, I had this camouflage army coat. I'm like, I'm being profiled. You know, it's like, because I look like I party, they're pulling me over, you know. So I'm like mad. And, you know, he comes up, and they carried revolvers back then. He comes up with a flashlight, and he's like, are you feeling all right? And he's asking, he's like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just driving home. Like, I didn't mention, because I'm afraid I smell like alcohol, and I'm a minor. I shoved that whole beef and cheddar in my mouth. So when I'm talking to him, I probably have roast beef flying around and cheese all over my face, and I'm trying to act all nonchalant, you know. I'm just driving home, man. Like, why are you hassling me? Isn't there a robbery you could be stopping or something, you know? I mean, that was my attitude. I mean, that's all I was thinking. Like, someone's probably getting killed right now, and they're pulling me over, you know. But, you know, and he tells me what, you know, he's like, well, I had to slam on my brakes, or, you cut me off. It would have been an accident. I'm like, that's why you got brakes. Like, be cool to me, you know. And he's like, get out of the car. And that wasn't good because I was eating Plastidils, which are muscle relaxers. So I got out and did a little rubber band walk for him, you know. Next thing you know, I'm handcuffed, you know, and I'm just like, man. You know, all those years to get my license, and I don't know. I, you know, made up some lies, and my dad was there, and I just remember my dad, you know, he's just so straight-laced and hardworking. I can't relate to him at all. I still don't think he's my father, but I'm a workaholic. You talk about work, I'm about to get drunk. But anyway, he... You know, picked me up. They got me a lawyer. We got a reckless op kind of thing. It was 1984. And I think that's the first time I heard an NA speaker. I had to go to, like, I was still a juvenile. I had to go to juvenile, like, drug classes. You know, we thought it was a big joke. We'd get baked before the drug class, you know. And they had a counselor like, did you ever think that maybe it's because you're drunk that that happened? You know, that kind of thing. And, you know, you just are total, you know, just terrible. And they had the chart, the alcoholism chart. I remember the first time I saw it. We thought that was hilarious. We were like, dude, they're saying it's alcoholism. We thought it was like Beavis and Butthead is what we were like in it. And some guy from NA came, and he talked. And all I remember of his story is he talked about they were robbing pharmacies. No, veterinary clinics, and shooting up horse tranquilizer. And so me, I never did that. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, I'm glad you got a place you can go. I'm not like that. But if I ever rob a veterinary clinic and shoot a horse tranquilizer, I'll look you guys up. You know, that's, you know, just all about the differences. And so I hitchhiked another 6 months in the winter, and it sucked. And everybody had had it with my shit. A couple quick blackouts. One night I come to in a parking lot, and there's some man with a beard. I'm 17. This guy with a beard's going, string bean, said he's got a gun. I'm like, who the hell is this guy that I'm seeing for the first time in my life? And I'm like, no, I didn't. And my friends are like, yeah, you did. You know, and it's not good to tell somebody you got a gun when you don't. And but it was just, you know, embarrassing. And luckily I didn't get beat to death. And then another... it wasn't a blackout. It was just me being cute as usual. I would always get these cute ideas. I don't know if anybody can relate to this. I think things are cute. Nobody else does. His friends, this guy and his girlfriend were at my house. We're, you know, doing whatever, getting high and stuff, drinking, and we're watching like Friday the 13th. So, and like I said, I grew up on a farm. All of a sudden, I think my dad's got a chainsaw in the other room. You know what I mean? I'm like, it'll freak him out. You know what I mean? So I'm like, you guys, sit still. I got a surprise for you. So they think I'm going to break out some choice drugs or something, you know. I come around the corner with a chainsaw running like, wow, I chase them drunk through the house, upstairs, you know. Steps that I've fallen down a million times sober in socks. I'm drunk, chasing around the house, you know. They lock themselves in the garage. They won't come out. And, you know, I don't get it. I'm like, dude, it's just a joke. Come on out. They're like, you're going to kill me, man. You know what I mean? And he's like, they were disturbed. I guess it's disturbing to get chased by a chainsaw. But, you know, I never hung out with them again. You know what I mean? And the guy got me on Facebook after about 25 years. And he's like, you ever chase anybody with a chainsaw? I said, only you. And, you know, they never came back. And it would be crazy. I'd be calling people, like, just pathetic. You know, like, hey, bro, like, pick me up. You know, I got a DUI. And they'd be like, yeah, yeah. And they wouldn't. Yeah, we're going to come pick you up so you can bring your $2 and change to pitch in. You know, because I'd lost that job I had. You know, actually, I quit it because I couldn't wait an hour to drink is why I quit. But and then I was really mad because, you know, I always showed up to work because it's like, hey, you want to drink? Go to work. You know, I lost my license 6 months, hitchhiked 6 months, several other things with, you know, my family, just horrible things with my family. The meanest I would be to my family and loved ones is when I couldn't drink and I wanted to. That's when I really went psycho. Like, they'd be like, what's wrong? What are you looking for? And I'd be like tearing the house apart, hoping I'd stash something somewhere, you know what I mean? And it's like, I know no one's going to pick me up. I know no one, you know what I mean? No one wants me to party with them, and I'd just be home with the family, you know. It'd just be pathetic. And you know, I would just lash out at them, you know what I mean, because it's like, I'm just so mad I can't drink, you know. I'd just say mean things to my mother and, you know, my brother and sister. And I got my license back, which was crazy. We had this big family meeting. It wasn't big, it was just me and my mom and dad, and my mom lives with me, you know what I mean? So she's horrified. I mean, I hear her on the phone, she'd be like, he's been down there for 3 days. He hasn't come out of his room. I'm afraid to go in there, you know, and I just thought she was dramatic. But the truth is, depending on, you know, I might have some narcotics. I might just take a nap for a week, you know. You just don't know. I might just stay down there for a while, you know. Or you might find me taking a nap in the front yard in August, you know. I might just be sleeping. You know, she'd come home from work like, oh, my God, he's dead. You know what I mean? I'm like, shut up, Mom. There's ants crawling on my face, you know. I'm just taking a nap. Just relax. Sunburn, you know, on the back of my head. But she didn't want me to get my license because she's afraid I was going to kill someone, you know what I mean, with the drinking. And my dad was just like, look, just promise me you won't drink and drive. And I'm like, I can do that. You know, and he's like, if you do drink, just promise me you'll call me. Because if you call me, he goes, I'll either get you a taxi or I'll come and get you. And he said, I won't bitch you. I'm almost in tears. Like, I'm just like, I love you, Dad. You know what I mean? And I'm looking at my mom like, F you, you know? And I mean, my mom was the smart one. There's no good reason for me to have a driver's license. I mean, I don't have a job. I don't go to school. All I do is drink and drive, you know, pretty much. You know, and run felons around. You know what I mean? So I went out that night. And I'm just like, I'm telling all my friends, and I remember just how cocky I was. I was like, dude, I can't get a DUI. You know what I mean? This is what I'm saying at this party. I'm like, I can't even get a DUI. Just call the old man. He's totally cool, you know? And I got a guy that lives like two houses down who's not even drinking because he's got like soccer tryouts or something. And I'm just getting hammered, you know? I remember we were funneling, like, I had bought, and I would always be like proud of stuff like this. I bought like all the beer you could get that was like under a dollar, a quarter, a 40. It was like all the shittiest beer ever, you know what I mean? And I paid for like, you know, change on the counter. The people are like, you loser, you know, looking at you. And I'm just like, sweet, you know, and I'm doing all this beer, you know, beer bongs. And I remember my buddy talking to me. Like, dude, you shouldn't drive. You know what I mean? You totally shouldn't drive. Let me drive. And I mean, I'm doing where I can't walk through a door. I'm like, bam, bam, bam. You know what I mean? Like three tries and I can get through. And I'm like, no way, you can't drive the Stang, man. You can't drive the Stang. Well, next thing you know, the Stang is flipped. And I'm yelling at him, like, why'd you let me drive? You know what I mean? Now I'm going to get a DUI. I'm like blaming this guy that begged me to let him drive. And, you know, so I get this brilliant plan that, first, I'm like, we're gonna lift the car off the guardrail. It's total. All the wheels are off the ground. I'm like, we're gonna lift it up, and put it on, you know, on the road. I've seen this before, and you know, usually there's a person trapped under the car though. But you know, I was like, we just gotta put our minds to it. That didn't work. And then the next brilliant plan, I go up to this house and just start beating on the door. And this guy comes out in his robe, and I just go in his house. You know, I'm drunk. I'm just in his house. You know, and I'm like, we need to use your phone. There's been an accident. And he's just like, okay, and he lets me use the phone, and then he's like, well, aren't you going to call the police? And then we're having like the stare down. I'm like, what are you talking about the police for? You know what I mean? Like, what the hell is your problem? Like, why would we call we don't need the police. I just called my mom in a tow truck, everything's fine. And he's like, well, you should always call the police. There's been an accident. And I remember, thank God I didn't do it, but I remember looking at this fireplace kit, and I was looking at the poker, and I was like, I think this guy's going to call the police as soon as I go outside. And like, God, I don't want to kill him, but maybe I need to give him a couple raps on the head, you know what I mean? So to ensure he doesn't call the police, you know? And I remember, you know, when you're like that kind of drunk, you know what I mean? Where you're just kind of like, I was doing that number, and I was thinking about it, and thank God I didn't do it. But we went outside, and but I remember thinking it, like, that's the kind of prayer that I have, like, God, I really don't want to kill him, but I don't see how I have any choice, you know? He's going to make me pay the consequences for my drinking. So I just remember getting out there and my buddy being like, the cops are here, be cool. And I'm like, I can't, you know what I mean? I cannot stabilize without some help. So I got in the car and I made up some lie about the road being wet and I lost control of the vehicle, you know, it was S-curves, and I hit them doing like 55 and they're like 15. And I told him about the road being wet, and he had that state trooper, you know, hat. He looks over me with the clipboard, and he's like, you do realize we're in a drought. And there was no water anywhere. I just started laughing, you know, where you just bust out laughing. And the other thing, my head kept hitting the window hard, like, boom, you know. And I'd be like, two beers, you know. And I got a DUI. And the main thing I remember is just my dad and his face. Because it's been like 6 hours, you know what I mean? It's been like 6 hours. Just please don't drive. Or just call me. You know what I mean? I just don't want to see you get a DUI. You're 18 now. And he's like, well, I don't know what the hell you're going to do. Just try to help you and you shit all over. You know what I mean? Kind of talk. And I said something smart. And he hit me a few times. I felt a little better. And he's like, so what are you going to do? You know, he's off. What are you going to do? I was like, I'm going to go to jail. Just relax. You don't have to go. I do it. I'll handle it. You know, a totally different tune in the morning when I'm not drunk. I'm like, what are we going to do? Are we going to get an attorney? You know, like, you got to help me, Dad. You know, and a buddy of mine was in a rehab, and I was making fun of him the day before. So now I'm like, dude, what's the number of that place? You know what I mean? And that's the only reason I went, is because my friend was in there. And I just thought it was funny. Like, we're both losers. We're in this freaking drug, alcohol place, you know. I remember packing my locker up. It was my senior year of high school, and everybody's like, where are you going? I'm like, going to the alcohol hospital. Like, it was like gangster or something. And I remember these people were just like, well, you really do seem to have a drinking problem. And I would get so mad. I mean, I would get so mad. Like, I do not. Like, this is just bullshit. I just got bad luck, you know. I would never, I mean, that would always be my thing. I never think I'm an alcoholic. I just think, why didn't I let Tim drive? You're an idiot. That's your problem. I mean, that's what I thought when I came to AA. I never once thought I was an alcoholic. I just thought, you're an idiot. With the, I left out on the whole Arby's thing. The DUI was because I got a beef and cheddar. I mean, it's simple. If I wouldn't have stopped for the beef and cheddar, I would have never crossed paths with the cop. I would have never got a DUI. You know what I mean? And that's how I thought about everything in my life. You know, never had, you know, it just, I made the wrong, I zigged when I should have zagged, you know. So I went in this treatment center. It totally freaked me out. It was in 1984. There were kids in there wearing dog collars with spikes and stuff, all the punk rock stuff and mohawks and stuff. I was like, man, these kids are messed up. Thank you. And, you know, so I went in there, and I don't know, it just was weird. The first AA meeting is so funny. It was a guy named Bill. Bill had been sober 30 years. That was enough to give me a heart attack right there. He's like, I haven't had a drink in 30 years. I was like, that just sounds terrible. You know, it just sounds like being in a dungeon, being tortured for 30 years in AA. You know, and I mean, I didn't even know anything about AA, but it just sounded horrible. You know what I mean? And I just thought of the Birdman from Alcatraz. But it sounded like life in prison or something. But he said the only hopeless case was 24 empty bottles, and that kind of made sense. And, you know, I went through treatment. They had young peoples came in. They had a big young peoples groups, like 400 people. It's called Monday Night Young Peoples. And I went there, and there were young people there, so that was kind of weird. And it mostly just seemed like, you know what, when I'm 25 or 30, and if I turn out to be an alcoholic, I could go to that AA thing, but I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just an idiot. I just made some mistakes, you know, and this whole mother's against drunk driving. I mean, seriously. It's just really, you know, they're just hassling us, you know what I mean? And I always felt like the cops were chasing me. And I mean, I've never been pulled over for just suspicion. I've always had my car stuck on something or a garbage can wedged in the front or someone on top of my car. You know, there was always a reason I was pulled over. So anyway, I get out. I'm like, I'm going to live this sober life. Or anyway, because I'm a genius, I decide I'm a drug addict, but I can't drink, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? It's like I'm not an alcoholic, but I can't drink. Because when I drink, it's when I get arrested, choke my friends out, and stuff like that. I left out, I almost killed my best friend because he said I was an alcoholic, so I almost killed him. And, you know, so I got out, I tried the marijuana maintenance. When I smoke pot, I just get thirsty. And I don't reach for a Dr. Pepper. You know, I want 40. So anyway, I start drinking. You know, it's just going to be one. It's always going to be just one. Also, I had a big, real hard time with AA. I thought AA was just stupid. Like, when they're like, it's the first drink that gets you drunk, I'd be like, no, it isn't. It's like 13 and a half, I think. You know what I mean? I just, anything they said in AA, I was just like, that's just stupid. You know what I mean? And they're like, if you don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk. I'll go, oh, that's tricky. You know what I mean? I was like, that might work for the brain dead people, but I'm not falling for that shit, you know? So I started drinking and couldn't stop. I read some article that they're filling empty hospitals with treatment centers, and I was off to the races. I was like, alcoholism ain't a disease. I'm not an alcoholic. It's just unlucky. I'm like, I got 2 years before I get my license back, so I can't possibly get in trouble because the whole Mothers Against Drunk Driving can't get me. I mean, I don't rob people. 3 months later, I had a robbery charge. Sitting on my bed in handcuffs. My little brother's freaking out. My sister's freaking out. There's cops with guns in the house. You would have thought I was a freaking mass murderer. I had all these cops. It was crazy. And I just couldn't believe it. It was just like shocking. Like, you're going to prison, punk. And I was like, no, I'm not. And then I get an attorney. He's like, you're going to prison. I was like, shit. You know, and he was like, but don't worry. He said, you're just going to do like 18 months in Mansfield Penitentiary. And I was like, no, I'm not. I was like, I've been thinking about killing myself anyway. You know, this just gives me a reason to up the date, you know, kind of thing. So anyway, I kind of freaked out. And I became an alcoholic again all of a sudden. You know what I mean? I thought, I really have a disease. You know what I mean? I need help. We'll have time for you afterwards. So you know, I went back into treatment, did everything they said to do, got a sponsor, started reading the big book, and the big book made no sense to me. You know, I'd read it just didn't make any sense. But I got a sponsor, and that's the most important thing I did. And how I picked my sponsor, it wasn't because I thought he was spiritual or he knew the book. I didn't know any of that stuff. I just knew that this guy talked about driving to work in rush hour traffic when he didn't have a job, on LSD, so he'd feel like he was part of society. And I was like, that's my guy. And that's been my sponsor for the last 30 years. You know, that's I've had the same sponsor. And, you know, I didn't really like him the more I got to know him in the beginning, because all he talked about was AA. And all he talked about was the big book, which irritated me, because I was like, dude, did you see, this book was written like 1939. Like, it's 1984. I think they should have a newer book, you know. And anyway, he, you know, I still, but I'd call him, you know, occasionally, and I wanted him to go to court with me. And that was my idea, so I kept hinting about it. And he's like, Bill, he said, don't worry. He said, they got a lot of AA in prison. He said, so when you get to prison, you'll be able to go to AA. And I was like, I don't know why I didn't fire him right then, you know. You know, you're going to have to be quiet or you're going to have to leave, okay? So anyway, he, yeah, I don't know why I didn't fire him that night when he said that. You know what I mean? I was just like, you're not going to go to court with me. You know, what good are you as a sponsor? So, he just kept telling me, you know, read the big book, whatever, and somehow I didn't drink for 6 months. Started going to meetings, hated it, didn't call him much, read the big book, like I said. It got time for my court date, and my attorney's like, you're going to prison. And so I just started thinking, like, why should I stay for this? I should just hitchhike to Colorado, go, you know, live in a teepee or whatever, and just wait it out. You know what I mean? Just never come back to Ohio. So what ended up happening, though, is I called him right before and told him what was up. I mean, I knew I'd get in more trouble, you know. Like I always say, I knew that I was no, you know, guy that could make it on the run or whatever. You know, I knew they'd find me in my parents' backyard in a Scooby-Doo tent eating Pop-Tarts or something. You know what I mean? I knew I'd get caught, like, right by my house. You know, yeah, you didn't come to court. So, you know, I called him, and I was like, what should I do? You know, they offered me a plea bargain. I didn't know if I should take it. And he said, look, I can't tell you what to do, but I would pray about it, you know. And he's like, and this is the one that really took me up, he's like, and try to help another alcoholic. I'm like, from the guy that won't come to court with me, you know what I mean? And but I didn't say that because I respected him or whatever. So, you know, I hung up the phone, and I mean, I'm nuts. I'm like, I should just book, you know what I mean? I should just leave and not go to court, because it's not going to be good. And my roommate from the treatment center called me like 5 minutes later, and he's drunk, he's in a phone booth, and he's crying, he's stuttering. He's been on like a 10-day run, and he's just a mess. And I'm trying to help him. You know, I'm repeating stuff like a parrot, stuff that I don't even. You know, I'm like, well, do you got a sponsor? Call your sponsor. Are you reading the big book? Say the third step. All this kind of crap, you know, that I hear other people saying that I don't really do. And when it was done, I hung up the phone. I just remember being calm. And I remember thinking, like, God, if I have to go to prison, just take care of me. Like, I'd rather be sober going to prison than be him drunk in that phone booth. At least I got a chance. Maybe if I go to prison and don't drink and stay sober, I got a chance of having some kind of life, you know. And I went to court the next day and lucked out, didn't go to prison. You know, I ended up going to jail, but not prison, which was a lot better. And I got out, and I was like, hallelujah, it works, you know. I got like 60 days, you know, I'm a miracle. And I going to meetings, you know, and it only took about a week, you know, and I'm like smoking cigarette. I'm like, here I am, I'm 18, I'm an AA. Sucks, you know, and I'm not going to prison. I'm like, this sucks. It's the same thing every night, AA, you know. And I got drunk, you know what I mean. I was unwilling to work the steps. I mean, don't get me wrong. My sponsor was like trying to get me to do an inventory, and I was like, not doing that. I mean, the first time I read the four step, fifth step, I was like, I'm not doing that. And I got drunk a lot, you know, and then I pretty much just started sponsoring myself, and I drank even more often, you know. And I would do things like I'd be driving to an AA meeting, and on the way I'd flip a coin. Heads, go to the AA meeting, tails, drink. And it'd be heads, go to the AA meeting. I'd be like, 2 out of 3. You know what I mean? I'd do whatever it took to drink. And never call him before. I'd start to call him, you know, and I'd think, why would I call him? He's going to talk me out of drinking. That doesn't make any sense, you know, stuff like that. I mean, I don't know how I'm sober. But finally, I just got so damn mad. I mean, I just got so sick of being dry, I think. And the other fortunate thing for me is I couldn't sleep, like, the first year. And he worked third shift. So I might not be willing to call for help at 10, but around 3 a.m. after the TV went off and it was, you know, just static, and I paced around my house for about 3 hours and smoked about 2 packs of Marlboros. I was like, well, this guy from AA said I can call him anytime, and I just call him and just be nuts, and he just talk about the big. Have you read the doctor's opinion? You know, like it was exciting or something. And like, yeah, I read it once. It's pretty stupid. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I just started reading the book like every day, and Oh, I know what Ryan was talking about, the action. I was like, you know, when I believe this stuff, I'll do it. But I'm not going to shake these people's hands that I don't like. That just seems fake. I'm not going to be a fake, you know. And he convinced me that I had to act myself into right thinking, and that it was a program of action. It didn't matter if I believed it. It didn't matter if I understood it. It just mattered if I did it. And so I got mad. I was like, I'm going to do everything this guy says, and then when it doesn't work, I can drink freely. You know what I mean? I'm just going to drink freely. And I've been sober ever since, you know, and that's my sobriety date's May 25th of 1985. You know, and it was through trying to prove AA wouldn't work for a loser like me. That's what I felt like, you know, and I've been sober ever since, you know. And the first big things I think I did was speak, like, believe it or not. Like, if I had anything where you had to speak in front of people, I just failed. You know, in school, I'd be like, nope, I'm not getting up from there and have all you people eyeballing me. Hell with that. You know, but now if I was high on narcotics, I'd volunteer. I'll do mine now. You know, I'd be drooling. I'd be up there just drooling. Line. Keep asking for the line. And people in the front are like, he's on drugs. I'm like, shut up, you know. But we spoke at a jail, you know, and then he said, why don't you come down to the mental hospital with me? I'm like, why would we go to the mental hospital? And he's like, it'll keep you sober. So we started going to the mental hospital, and I'm talking like one flew to a cuckoo's nest. Everybody's on Thorazine. You give them a cigarette, one hit. They smoke the whole cigarette, and you're just like, whoa. And he's like, can I have another cigarette? You know, and I'd be like, why are we here? And he's like, that's alcoholism, you know. And he goes, you keep drinking, you know. Then he got me going to the prison, which I thought was totally nuts. He's like, yeah, we meet at my house at 2, then we drive 2 hours up to London, Ohio, then we'll eat dinner, then we go to this prison, in the medium security prison. And I'm like, why would we want to go inside a prison? That doesn't sound very safe, you know. And he was like, well, don't do it if you don't want to, because it'll keep you sober, you know. So we went up there, man, and it just changed my life. All these guys are shaking my hand, about snapping, all breaking all the bones in my hand, you know. Like, but I met a bunch of guys like me. They were all in there, you know, they're like, they don't remember what they did. They're in a blackout, killed their best friend, stuff like that. And, you know, I still do jail today. I still do detox today. And I do all that because I believe that's our natural habitat. Our natural habitat isn't sitting here sober in an AA meeting. It's being in a treatment center or a jail or a mental hospital or, you know, I mean, or just annoying the shit out of people is, you know, what I was doing in between those times. But, you know, AA is just, it's been a great way of life. This meeting especially is so funny because it's a miracle that I ever even went to this meeting. The guy that started the meeting, you know, I ended up speaking somewhere and he heard me talk and heard that I got sober young and wanted me to come. And I was like, I'm not going to a young people's meeting. There was young people's when I was, you know, young and new. And I liked it in the fact that it took away the excuse that I was too young. But I was way too cool to go to a young people's meeting. You know what I mean? I was like, I know, I'm going to hang out with these older dudes that have been in prison, bro, because, you know, they're hard. Or whatever. I mean, I just was way too cool to hang out with my peers. And these guys got me involved, and it's just been a blast. I've never probably known so many new people as from the time I've been involved in this young people's meeting down here. And the things that have helped me the most in AA have been things that I've totally not wanted to do or that I think are stupid ideas. Like the prison. I thought the prison was a stupid idea. I can't tell you how many times I don't want to go to the jail meeting, and then I leave. I practically skip out of that place. You know what I mean? I'm like, I love everything about my life. You know what I mean? Compared to what I just heard about in there. And I don't know. It's just a good way of life. I mean, the things I do today, like I said, I do the detox. I've had the same job for 16 years. Pre-AA, I would have jobs for hours. Doing my taxes was a nightmare because I'd have so many W-2s from all the jobs that I worked for like 4 hours, you know, and quit. You know, I've had my driver's license since I've been sober. That's pretty amazing for me. I usually had my driver's license about 3 months before AA, 3 to 6 months. I have a good relationship with my parents. Lately, the newest thing for me in the last few years, as far as my program goes, is daily meditation. And just for anybody who's tried meditation and had trouble with it, it took me like 22 years. I mean, I would try to meditate, and it would be kind of like a combination between Friday the 13th and a porno movie. Whenever I would try to meditate, I'd just be like, there's no hope. My brain is just too crazy. There's just too much going on up there. But I'm happy to say that I actually meditate for like 45 minutes a couple times a day. Really ain't much more to say. I just want to thank all of you for being a part of my sobriety, and thanks for listening. Thank you.